This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, July 5th. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On today's show, an emergency loan program designed to help homeowners behind on their mortgages because of a loss of employment or bad weather. And Tammy Bronson talks about her book, Seahorse Run. It won the 2011 Next Generation Indie Book Award.
And how young people, as young as 3 years of age, can be involved in an arts and music camp in Fort Smith later this month. I'll talk with Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell, the Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. First, residents living near natural gas extraction wells in north central Arkansas concerned about their drinking water will be the subject of a United States Geological Survey water quality study. It will be the first of its kind in the nation. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Over half of a projected 14,000 natural gas wells have been drilled in the rolling hills of Van Buren, Conway, Cleburne, and Faulkner counties in Arkansas. The methane is tapped from an underlying rock formation known as the Fayetteville Shale. Other such formations exist beneath Texas, Louisiana, New York, Pennsylvania, and Colorado. But in Arkansas, data show the Fayetteville Shale formation, between 50 to 550 feet thick, is shallow compared to other states found at depths from 1,200 to 7,000 feet deep. And because groundwater in that region is also shallow, water wells, which tend to be a few hundred feet deep, could be impaired by gas drilling. That's because most of the gas drilling is unconventional, a wet process. A vertical bore is drilled and cased several hundred feet. Once the shale layer is reached, a horizontal bore is created through which a pressurized solution of water mixed with sand and lubricating chemicals cracks the shale, releasing methane. 20 tons of chemicals may be used for a single million-gallon frack, and one well may be hydrofracked multiple times in different directions. As much as 70% of the frack solution flows back to the surface where it's reused, placed in retention ponds, or disposed of in hundreds of underground waste injection wells. Drill sludge contains hydrocarbons, metals, and volatile organic compounds. Frack fluid consists of water, propant, acids, corrosive inhibitors, friction reducers, and surfactants. A new federal gas hydraulic fracturing chemical disclosure registry lists various formulas, but common ingredients include isopropanol, methanol, petroleum distillates, hydrochloric acid, and various chlorides. And chlorides are what scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey in Arkansas will measure to see if frack waste is infiltrating into drinking water supplies.
My name is Jason Funkhauser. I'm with the USGS Arkansas Water Science Center in Little Rock, and I am the assistant director. At this time, there's very little groundwater data in the north central part of the state and water quantity and quality data. We have been working with numerous agencies to increase that level of monitoring. What you've had in the past in the past years is a rural part of the state. There's not been much other than farming and tree harvesting and a rural population, and now you've got an increased presence of industrialization occurring, and so now it's time to start gathering additional data.
The study will take place in Van Buren County, Faulkner, and possibly Conway County, where most gas hydrofracking operators are concentrated.
Shirley Community Development out of Van Buren County approached us to look at drinking water wells in Van Buren County. And in Faulkner County, it was the county judge, Preston Scroggin, who made the initial contact, as well as two quorum court members, Randy Higgins and Randy Ingram.
USGS scientists say concerned residents can contact them to have their wells tested.
Well, at this time, we're looking to test any residents up to 100 that are interested in these counties to have their wells tested. So right now, we don't have any specifics in mind. We're just looking for people to volunteer their wells to be tested. If we got a whole bunch of more than what we're funded to do, then we would start making a selection. We have a different selection criteria. But, yeah, we'll be looking at wells close to natural gas production, some that don't have any production, to try to get a wide variety of sampling.
The study involves two steps.
Well, this is a two-phased approach. The first phase is to sample as many wells as we can and have the Arkansas Water Resources Center in Fayetteville It's with the University of Arkansas. They will analyze the samples for chlorides. We will get those results back and look for areas with elevated levels of chloride, go back to that area and sample wells in the high chloride area and have further analysis done.
Additional fracking chemicals will be analyzed in the second phase, excluding petroleum distillates, which carry trace amounts of benzene, a carcinogen, very expensive to look for.
Well, the second phase of approach, the analyses are much more in-depth. We will be looking for a wide range of things, cations, anions, metals, trace metals, things of those nature.
This is the first study of its kind in the country with regard to shale plays and shale fracking production sites?
Well, currently the USGS has not had a lot of involvement with any shale plays. There's a little bit with the out in Pennsylvania with the Marcellus. So what we're doing is with respect to shale plays, is pretty groundbreaking, the amount of groundwater data that we're going to start collecting, as well as the interaction that we're having with all of these agencies, including the industry, to support a lot of these studies. The watershed model is something that's never been done before by the USGS with respect to the shale plays. So we are doing a lot of groundbreaking work here in Arkansas.
The Arkansas Oil and Gas Commission has regulatory oversight below the bore, with the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality regulating and monitoring surface water.
First, the USGS is a non-regulatory science agency. We have several different disciplines or divisions. Our office here in Little Rock is water. And we partner with many different agencies, state agencies. We work with federal agencies such as the Corps of Engineers, the Forest Service, state agencies, ANRC, that's Arkansas Natural Resources Commission, Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, and even we're working with the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, as well as local agencies. And we also work with the private industry. We're working with Southwestern Energy. They have funded a relatively large study in the Fayetteville Shale area. So we do many different things for many different agencies.
Southwestern Energy, based in Houston, is a major operator on the Fayetteville Shale play, fracking more than half of all gas wells.
The project we have with Southwestern Energy began late last summer. We began the data collection phase of that. It's a two-phased project. We're collecting water quality and quantity data, and we will be generating a watershed model with that data to simulate land use changes such as well pads, gravel roads, ponds, things like that, to see what, if any, changes occur in the stream flow. The quality-wise and quantity-wise.
In a previous query to Southwestern, the company said no chemical contamination has ever been detected in any private water wells tested near drill sites. Jason Funkhauser says emerging studies will help to clarify any threats to water resources on the Fayetteville Shale Formation.
The USGS, we do get a little bit of federal funds allocated, but we do rely upon our partners to help support the science that we collect. And without these partners, right now we've got 11 in the Fayetteville Shale. Without their support, we would not be able to be collecting any information. And we're very appreciative of those efforts, and we will be collecting very good data, very good background data to have.
USGS is also partnered with the U.S. Forest Service because 1,700 gas wells are planned for drilling on 10,000 acres of Arkansas National Forest within a million-acre leased region.
Several years ago, we did begin some baseline monitoring on the South Fork of Little Red River just near the Ozark National Forest. The U.S. Forest Service approached us and asked us to begin some basic monitoring where we are sampling storm events. We're working with the University of Arkansas. They're sampling monthly, and we're making regular discharge measurements, and we have a continuous water quality monitor in the stream so that we can gather some very good baseline data of the water coming out of the National Forest.
Jason Funkhauser and his team are also collecting downstream background data in the Gulf Mountain Wildlife Management Area, where gas shale has yet to be produced. That's in Van Buren County. Congress continues to consider legislation to regulate gas fracking. which currently is exempt from most major federal environmental laws. And EPA is also studying water quality contamination by hydraulic fracturing in five states, not including Arkansas, with results due in 2014. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The U.S. Geological Survey has created a web link on their website. For those who wish to track the study, you can just go to the Fayetteville Shale tab. This is Ozarks at Large for July 5th. Hope you had a safe 4th of July. This month, homeowners behind on their mortgages because of a loss of their job can seek help through an Emergency Homeowners Loan Program. EHLP, as it's known, is a program set up by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development designed to help people in danger of foreclosure because of the economy or a medical condition. In several counties in Arkansas, the loan application process is being coordinated through Credit Counseling of Arkansas, or CCOA, based in Fayetteville. Joel Dolger is the director of counseling at the nonprofit organization.
It's a great program that I think can help a number of people. I will admit, however, it's not going to help everybody. I don't think there's any one program that can do that. But what this can do is help those people who have gotten behind on their mortgage as a result of loss of income because of involuntary job loss or reduction in income because of a soft economy or because they've fallen ill. And a lot of people who were kind of planning their house payments based on a life in a more robust economic times are struggling now. And so this can step in and help those folks.
To be eligible, there are certain criteria that have to be met.
Mm-hmm.
90 days behind on mortgage?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be seriously delinquent. You have to have received a notification from your mortgage company that that they are looking at the possibility of foreclosure. It also requires that you have to be income eligible for this as well. A very well-to-do family is not going to be able to qualify for this. In the state of Arkansas, people who are on the mortgage note, their combined annual income, the gross annual income, cannot exceed $75,000. So it's to help out middle class and struggling families.
Primary residency?
Yes, that's another important part is that it has to be your primary residence. It can't be an investment property that you've fallen behind on. You can only have two mortgage liens against the property. So if you've got a third lien, they're not going to try to touch this. Mm-hmm. The mortgage holder has to have reasonable prospects of being able to resume the mortgage payments, the regular mortgage payments, after 2 years. So this program would suit somebody who whose income has been reduced temporarily, but say somebody was stricken with some disability and their income is permanently reduced. This program is not well suited to them. They also try to set it up so that people who are in such serious financial straits that this program would be just a drop in the bucket to them, it's really not going to be going towards them. So if somebody has a debt-to-income ratio of installment loans as well as revolving loans of in excess of 55% of their income, this program is they're not going to be eligible for this program.
Suffice to say, no one would want to be in the situation where they'd be eligible for this.
Absolutely, yeah. It's really for people who are struggling, who have done their best, but are caught in circumstances beyond their control.
The idea, help people be able to keep their home.
Right, and there's some very nice provisions in this. The product that comes out of all this is a loan product that people can borrow enough money to bring their mortgage current. So if they're 3 months behind, the loan would be created in order to pay the back principal, interest, taxes, insurance, as well as any foreclosure attorney fees that have been built up as a result of this. But then in addition to that, if their monthly mortgage payment exceeds 31% of their gross monthly income, the loan would also pay a portion of their monthly mortgage payment in excess of that 31%. So, and that's over a 2-year period. So that's a real nice benefit too. While the homeowner is trying to get their feet under them again financially, they're getting this bit of assistance. if the income returns, if they're able to get on their feet earlier than those 2 years, then the amount of support decreases. It's graduated depending on how much income their income increases. But perhaps the best feature of all is that it's a forgivable loan. 0% interest, forgivable loan, so that if the homeowner stays in the home for a five-year period after the initial loan period, the loan decreases 20% per year, so that at the end of 5 years, it's gone. They don't owe anything back.
This program originates through HUD.
Right. Congress had come up with some money to support people who are struggling like this. They provided $1 billion to HUD, and then HUD had allocated a certain amount of funds to every state. Some of those states that were in hardest hit areas got money immediately, and then the EHLP program kind of stepped in behind and now is helping states like Arkansas that didn't fit into that initial list of hardest hit states.
CCOA, Credit Counseling of Arkansas, comes in a way, for one reason, to help spread the word, try to get this to people who would be eligible?
Right. Yeah. Our first role is really to market the program so that people know about it. Then in addition, people who are applying, they have to submit a pre-application form, and they have to submit that to a local nonprofit housing counseling agency like CCOA. And then what we do is we provide that the information, the listing of all those applicants to NeighborWorks America, who is overseeing the program. What they're going to do is they're going to put together a lottery to make sure that the number of applicants don't outstrip the funding available. So there will probably be some people who are interested in this program that will not get picked from the lottery, unfortunately, and won't be asked to come back and make a formal application. But after that lottery, what we would do at CCOA is contact the people who were high enough in the listing. Have them come in with formal documents that show that this house is theirs, that it's their primary residence, that what their income was before the income loss, all those other things that are going to really document that they fit the criteria of the program.
You mentioned that the initial amount of money is $1 billion throughout the country. There are specific amounts for each state, is that right?
Yes, there is. In Arkansas, we were allocated $17.7 million. And the individual loan amounts per household can go up to as much as $50,000. They're expecting, though, that it's going to average about $35,000. Per household when all is said and done.
And again, people interested in EHLP, and that stands for Emergency Homeowners Loan Program, there's a deadline?
Oh, yes, it's very important. The program has kind of been in the works since September of last year, but the faucet wasn't turned on until last week, Monday, and then now it's something of a fire hose that we're drinking out of. The deadline for these pre-application forms is July the 22nd of this year. And you have to be 90 days delinquent on your mortgage as of June 1st. The deadline is coming up real quick. The other thing I should probably mention, Kyle, is that the funds for the loan will go to your mortgage company if you are approved for this application. So it's not put in the homeowner's pocket, but rather goes directly to the mortgage company.
Right to the note.
Yes.
Now, of course, our signal goes beyond just Northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm. If someone's listening, I don't know, in Adair County, Oklahoma, or McDonald County, Missouri, or somewhere south of Fort Smith.
Mm-hmm. What they asked us to do in our application was to kind of lay out an area that we wanted to cover. And we laid out an area of about 19 counties, primarily in northwest Arkansas, about four counties in Oklahoma, and two in southwestern Missouri. But if somebody's not sure where to submit their application, they can go to that NeighborWorks website. And from there, they can get there's a locator. You can just plug in what your zip code is. And from that, it'll tell you what the closest nonprofit housing counseling agency is.
So if someone's listening and they're not needing this assistance, but they have relatives in Lake Village or something,
mm-hmm.
tell them to go to the NeighborWorks
website.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Thank you very much for your time, Joel.
You're very welcome.
Joel Dolger is the Director of Counseling at Credit Counseling of Arkansas, or CCOA. CCOA is administering the Emergency Homeowners Loan Program applications for several counties in the region. For more information, you can go to ccoacares.com. In Crawford and Sebastian County, you can contact Karen Phillips, Home Ownership and Asset Development Center of Crawford-Sebastian County Community Development Council. That phone number is 785-2303. Or, just for more information about the program itself, you can put into a search engine EHLP and NeighborWorks. You can also look for the links on our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Statistics aren't compiled yet, but one Arkansas nurse says near drownings seem to be up this year. Donna Parnell Beasley, the trauma coordinator at Arkansas Children's Hospital, says the hospital has seen more drowning-related incidents so far this year than in all of last year. Parnell Beasley says most drownings happen in our own backyard.
What we've seen most so far this year has been in swimming pools, like home pools. Not so much neighborhood pools where there's a lifeguard present, but at a pool in a backyard of the family or of a relative.
There have been several reported drownings this summer, including a 2-year-old in Center Ridge and a UCA student at Beaver Fork Lake. The National Weather Service says that there have been 16 deaths due to flash flooding this year so far.
Governor Mike Beebe has decided to call an election to renew highway bonds after a more ambitious plan for highway funding fell through. The trucking industry 2 weeks ago withdrew its support for a 5-cent diesel tax hike for highway repairs, saying it likely wouldn't be passed by voters. The group suggested simply renewing existing bonds of $575 million. The governor's spokesperson, Matt DeCampbell, says the governor plans to do that either on the 2012 ballot or in a special election.
Highways have been a little more on the front burner than in recent months, and with those current bonds expiring in 2013, he thinks that this election cycle is the time to address that issue. This one will not carry any new revenue requirements or any new taxes, but it does help keep the highway funds we already have.
Matt DeCampbell says for now, the governor doesn't plan to call a special election on the diesel tax hike without the support of the truckers, but circumstances may change. And Kristen Worth Thomas of Fayetteville won yesterday's Firecracker 5K in Little Rock. The former Razorback ran the course in 16 minutes and 2 seconds. Stephanie Brown of Fayetteville finished third. Samantha Lurch of Fayetteville came in fifth. And Mackenzie Bloom of Bentonville finished seventh. Aaron Beatty of Fort Smith was the highest finishing male runner from the region in yesterday's 5K, coming in seventh. Drew Connor of Bentonville finished 12th.
It's Tuesday, July 5th, 2011. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us now is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
All of us still with 10 fingers.
Yep.
Yep.
It's a good day. And it's a good day to go to the farmer's markets.
Yes.
There's one on Garrison in Fort Smith until noon. There's one at Pine Mountain Village in Eureka Springs until noon.
And this is every Tuesday.
Every
not just
Tuesday.
Today.
Mm-hmm. There's one at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale until 1 o'clock. Of course, the Fayetteville Farmers Market Tuesday edition until 1 o'clock on the downtown square. And the Siloam Springs Farmers Market until 1 o'clock in City Park. And I want to give you a couple of heads up for tomorrow.
Please do.
Little Sprouts. The story time they have at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville, which I so want to go to, is at 10 o'clock tomorrow, and the theme is Tasty Taters. And at 10 o'clock tomorrow at the Rogers Public Library, folk music with Adam Miller. I want to be a kid in the summer. I think you do all the fun stuff.
I think you can be at heart.
Right.
You just have to still go to work.
Oh. Mm. Well, that's okay.
Okay. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Local author Tammy Carter Bronson has been writing and illustrating children's books for the last 13 years. Her fourth and most recent book, Seahorse Run, is the winner of the 2011 Next Generation Indie Book Award. Tammy talked with Ozarks at Large's Ithi Egnihotru-Madolker about her work and noted that while she knew she was going to write for a living, she didn't think she'd be an illustrator too.
I always wanted to be a writer ever since I was in elementary school. I knew in the fourth grade I was going to grow up to be an author, but I never imagined I would draw pictures with my stories. If I'd known that, I would have taken a lot more art classes.
So where do you get your inspiration from?
It always begins in the library. Whenever I set out to write a certain type of story, I go to the library and try to read as many books as I can, like the one I'm writing. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly comparing myself to what the other writers have already written.
Now, we have your book, Seahorse Run. How much time did it take for you to write and illustrate and research and do everything that you did for this book?
To do everything that I did for the book, the hardest part, usually it takes on average about a year for me to do a picture book. This book was the most challenging of any book I've ever done because it took about 5 years just to get the idea just right. And I was working on other stories in the meantime, but as I was working on it, I would come up with an idea and I'd go to the library, there would already be a book like that. And so I'd change my idea again. And I kept doing this over and over and over again. But once I finally got the idea, that first draft, from that point, it was exactly a year to write and illustrate. And that was working almost every day, at least every other day, for sure.
You've written three books, co-authored one with your husband, Matthew Bronson. Three are based on nature. Are you drawn to nature, or do you think children should be more involved since they stay inside most of the time?
I do. I love books for children that have animals as the heroes and main characters. I think every child, no matter where you live, you can relate to an animal story. Even adults relate really well to animal stories. But I noticed there are plenty of books in the library about dogs and cats and bears, really fuzzy animals. So I wanted to use underused animals like small slimy creatures like a snail or a frog, and then a seahorse fit right in with that.
Now, how do you make it so concise? Because there's, you know, you have to use the right words that get the message across to children, but you still need to keep the story going?
Absolutely. Word choice is a real challenge for kids, and I end up, it never comes out right the first time. I do a lot of rewrites. For this story, it took 19 rewrites.
Wow.
Now, some of those were just minor word choice revisions, but about five of those revisions were what I call a global rewrite, where you begin writing the story and then you go back and realize, no, this isn't what the story is about. Start over with the first word and begin again. And so about five global rewrites, and the others were just a lot of changing of word choices and taking out sentences. And I figure out how to do that by testing the story constantly on other people to see, do you think this word, would a first grader understand this word? And so I test it on librarians and teachers and even kids to make sure I'm getting it right.
That must be frustrating, 19 rewrites.
It can be frustrating. And the drawing is the same way. I will draw and redraw. It can be frustrating at times. But if I get too frustrated, I just realize, well, I just need to take a break and come back to it. It's just it's an essential part of the process. And you want to create a story that people will relate to and understand and like. You want them to like it enough, they're going to recommend it to a friend. And to really accomplish that, you have to work through that frustrating part of, oh, this isn't right yet. I still need to do it again.
Now, you travel a lot, speak with children in elementary schools. How do you engage children in your talks and in your books? Is that a process?
Yeah, ultimately I just try to create a story that will draw the kids in. And this story, I took some clues and tips from kids that I've met over the years. A lot of times kids will say, well, you should do a story about a shark. You should do a story about an eel or an octopus. And then a lot of the boys wanted a dragon story. And so I managed to accomplish all of that in this one book. The seahorse is the hero or main character, but there is a shark, an eel, an octopus, and ultimately a dragon.
What do you want children to take away from your books then?
I want them to be inspired. I want their imagination to run crazy. I want them to go away from it feeling excited and then wanting to come back to it and revisit it. I want them to feel so excited by the story that they want to revisit it. And I hope that I pack so much into the book that every time they revisit it, they learn something a little different, something they see something new that they didn't see before. And so I'm really excited about this book. One of the questions that kids always ask me over the years, they've always asked, have you won any awards? And I've always said, no, I haven't won any awards. But now, for the first time, I have won an award, the Next Generation Indie Book Award, and it was for Best Children's Picture Book. And the award is, it's been compared, it is to independent books what Sundance is to independent film. So, and there's a lot of different categories mm-hmm. that people enter, and it's for all small, medium presses. If the book is independently published, you can enter. And so they get entries from around the world. And the picture book category is pretty popular, so I never imagined, I never thought I would win. My greatest hope was to be one of the finalists, but...
Well, that's wonderful. So would you like to read your favorite part from Seahorse Run?
That would be fun. I would love to. I think I'll read the beginning.
Okay.
Far across the ocean, a reef kissed the surface of the water. Coral covered the reef, and coral was alive. Coral loved to sing, but the only animal that could hear her song was Seahorse. Seahorse could swim, but coral could not. Coral was rooted in the rock. When the current was strong, Seahorse clung to coral with his tail. When coral was red, Seahorse looked red. When coral was yellow, Seahorse turned yellow. When Seahorse was not with coral, he was blue like the sea. I love the beginning. It has sort of a fairy tale quality to it. And it really draws you into the story. And then we start to meet the big scary animals, like the shark and the octopus. And each one has something to tell Seahorse. For example, Shark says, "A sea dragon is coming. Sea dragons are fearsome, terrible beasts. They have 10 rows of teeth that chomp sharks into bits. Seahorse, run." An eel has another tale to tell. "A dragon's jaws can snap a whale in two. Sea dragon gobbles sharks for dinner and slurps eels for dessert. He will eat you too. Seahorse, run." At the back, I have these wonderful facts about the real animals. There's a whole page about seahorses, what do they eat, how do they move. And then there's another page all about the sea dragons, the three types of sea dragons, actually, the leafy, weedy, and ribbon sea dragon. But the children's favorite part of the book, I think, is that after that, there's a panorama here of animals of the Australian coral reef. And so it has every animal that I put in the book, and each one is labeled. And the kids love to go through and back through the book and pick out the animals that are labeled in this picture.
Tell us something about your book signing that's coming up.
I have a book signing at Barnes & Noble Saturday, July 9th at 3 o'clock. And then I'll be at Nightbird Books the first Saturday in August at 1:30 for an informal gathering. So,
thank you so much, Tammy.
Thank you, Edie. It was a pleasure.
Tammy Carter Bronson's most recent book is titled Seahorse Run and is the winner of the 2011 Next Generation Indie Book Award. She talked to Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar inside the Harold and Blanche Kalk studio at KUAF.
By the end of this month, dozens of young people in the Fort Smith region will be ready to stage a summer production of Robin Hood, complete with songs and onstage combat. The work for the July 29th play at Breedlove Auditorium begins just a few days before the staging on Monday, July 25th. The summer camp explosion at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts will include classes in acting, music, and more.
We have what we call our Kinder Kids Camp, and we have a camp. It's 4 of the week, and we've redesigned this camp just a little bit. It's actually an everyday, all-morning camp the week of July 25th through 29th, and it's for 3 and 4-year-olds, and we call those kids the Cool Cats. And so they come every morning from 9 until noon, and they have a curriculum, and the curriculum this summer is called the Nature Trail. And what this curriculum does is it presents the beginning learning of musical instruments, rhythms, singing, some dancing and movement, and some theater-like games. And it's designed to get children that age, you know, very young children, involved in the arts and give them a taste of a little bit of music, theater, and dance all in 1 week's time. And they'll prepare the pre-show for the Extreme Arts Kid Fest. So they'll do about a little 10-minute performance before the big kids perform. And we just think Kinder Kids Camp is loads of fun. It's, and the parents can be involved in Kinder Kids Camp. They have the option of staying with their child all morning or dropping their child off and letting them participate alone. So we feel like that's a very good fit.
Now, this is the last week of July, so I'm guessing there's still time to sign up.
Yes, this is the last week of the camp is the last week of July. So we are currently registering students daily. And what they need to do is they can call us at 479-788-7251 or 7252, or they can download registration forms either for Summer Camp Explosion or Kinder Kids Camp at www.uafortsmith.edu/academy, and just mail that right in to us, and we will get them enrolled. Ms. Alice Sanders is our resident preschool instructor, and she's nationally certified in our preschool music garden program. So she handles all of the preschool classes throughout the school year in the summer, and then handles summer camp. And she's really fantastic with very young children and with their parents. And it's just an excellent program. And I would encourage people, if they have a young child, a 3 or 4 year old, or a child that's about to turn 3, I would encourage them to bring their child to summer camp. It's a great place to start and find out if your child likes the arts. And most children just love it at that age.
I would imagine if you would have a pretty good idea after going through this week-long camp.
Yes. As a matter of fact, most children that are involved in summer camp, then they continue on in the fall in our music garden program, our preschool program. And so it's really a great fit. I believe in the arts strongly for very young children because it opens up their mind and their creativity, and just it just opens them up to some new things that they haven't experienced. And so I'm really a believer in getting children involved at a very young age in the arts.
And is it too early for parents or their children to be thinking about the fall semester? I don't want to wish the summer away, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, it isn't at all. And we'll be auditioning kids for some of our audition groups in July and August. And, we start up when the school semester starts. So we'll have a lot of things going by mid-August. And then the rest of our classes begin early September, right after Labor Day. So it is not too early to be thinking about that. Classes fill up. And this next year in theater, once we hit summer camp and children and youth are aware of, are involved in summer camp and aware of what's going on in the fall, I mean, they are registering like crazy because these classes have a limit on them. And next year we're doing shows like Annie and Thoroughly Modern Millie, and we're doing the big show of Oklahoma and High School Musical. I mean, we have all these shows going that kids, that either children or youth all the way to high school can register for. So once everybody realizes those are what we're going to do this next year, it will be time to enroll. And we will have all of our registration forms ready by early July. So, yes, it'll be next time you and I have a conversation, that's what we'll be discussing.
All right. And again, if people have any questions, they can go to uafortsmith.edu/academy.
That's correct. And we hope to see everybody in summer camp. Last year, we had 75-plus students. This is hugely popular, and, it's right here on the campus, so convenient. You can drop your child off on your way to work and come back after work, and we will take good care of them all day. Have a great time together.
I like that. Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell is the Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Kyle. Good to talk to you.
Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell is the Executive Director of the UAFS Academy of the Arts in Fort Smith. Summer camps begin Monday, July 25th, and culminate with the onstage presentation of Robin Hood inside Breedlove Auditorium on the UAFS campus Friday night, July 29th at 6 p.m. That play is free to everybody, and it will be followed by a reception on the campus green that includes watermelon and cake. This is Ozarks at Large. You can find out more about our programs and listen to them again in their entirety, if you'd like, at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. And don't forget that the 13th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series will begin Saturday night, July 16th at 8 o'clock with jazz pianist Eldar Jandaroff at Walton Art Center Star Theater. He has performed jazz standards and Bach from the Hollywood Bowl to Carnegie Hall and notable jazz venues, including the Blue Note. Tickets, including limited cabaret seating, are available at 443-5600 or waltonartcenter.org.
A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Robinson.
And where is Robinson, Arkansas?
It's near 412, about halfway between Taneytown and Siloam Springs.
There you go. We've probably been there, not even
probably.
Now. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Another new show tomorrow at noon.